You're listening to Through the Funnel, where we demystify classical Chinese medicine. I'm your host, Mallory Jaimo, and this is episode number 12. Hi, welcome. Today I am joined by Peter Shea, a scholar of classical Chinese medicine and my once clinical supervisor and instructor. Peter, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Mallory. Thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited to have you here today because I want to introduce the eight extra vessels and meridians to our audience. These meridians and vessels have been used for thousands of years to address diseases of the constitution and spiritual and karmic nature, which oftentimes patients and people who are familiar with Chinese medicine don't necessarily think of Chinese medicine as addressing these types of quote unquote diseases and pathology related to spiritual nature. But before we dive into that, I want to share a bit more about you. So Peter is the clinical internship director and instructor for the master's program at my alumni, Taoist Traditions. In 2003, he received his master's in Oriental Medicine from the International Institute of Chinese Medicine in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He is also the author of Alchemy of the Extraordinary, A Journey into the Heart of the Meridian Matrix. And he's also the creator of many Chinese medicine online courses. You can check out his work at soulpivot.com. And Peter and his family reside in the Blue Ridge Mountains, where he also studies and teaches and enjoys the practice of Qigong, Tui Na, Taoist philosophy, and Northern Wu Tai Chi. Peter, thank you again so much for joining me today. The eight extras are such a big topic and conversation. And when I was looking around for just an explanation of what they are and what they do, I was so glad to have your book because it gives that insight. But can you kind of expand a little bit more on what they are?
Yeah. I mean, I find sometimes, even if somebody asks me, like, what is acupuncture, my explanation will kind of depend on what I was thinking about the night before. But I always find that it's fun to try to explain some of these concepts in Chinese medicine, something that we do every day in the clinic, trying to help people connect to these ideas. I think the eight extraordinary vessels are mysterious by nature. I think that they're not necessarily supposed to be too much less mysterious than that. I think that's what they call in Chinese medicine, the source qi or the yuan qi, kind of the energy of, that's bigger than us. I feel like the eight extraordinary vessels are, you know, direct connection to that mystery. And then how that connects into our body and into our health. It's kind of, we have those maps from the ancient Chinese, you know, help us find our way that way. These channel systems, we have five channel systems. The primary meridians and the sinew meridians are mainly what people associate with acupuncture, things that help with musculoskeletal issues, things that help with basic conditions that are, you know, troubling people. And then, and some of those will tap into the psychological and emotional aspects. I feel like acupuncture is always kind of running on that circuitry of the emotions. And then as we go deeper, we get into issues of, that family issues, genetic issues, things related to birth trauma, things that might related to us in our growing as a fetus and things like that. I think you might not think you can really address. Even Chinese medicine says that what we call the prenatal energetics, you know, you kind of stuck with what you got. But then every time I studied with like anybody who is more spiritual or did Qigong, it seems kind of like, well, you may be kind of stuck with the hand you're dealt, but what are the possibilities? And I feel like that's where the eight extraordinary vessels are. Like, we don't necessarily, there's nothing wrong with us per se. So we don't really need to change that. But like, where can we find room to evolve? Where can we find room to be more comfortable, more creative, more present? And I think that these channels can create the environment for that kind of growth.
Yeah. And I really haven't thought, and maybe you say this in your book, but I haven't thought about them as the connection to the heavens and that source within us, because we are the medium, I guess, between heaven and earth. And when we look at the eight extra meridians, we look at them in pairs. So can you talk a little bit about those pairs and what we would consider the ancestries of them?
Yes. And I think what you're saying about, I mean, Chinese medicine have everything divided into trinities, especially mm-hmm. when medicine gets more spiritual. So heaven, earth, and humanity are one of those big trinities. And, you know, they're putting us right there in the center of a pretty big, you know, we're in good company with heaven and earth right there. And I think that implies that there's a lot of potential for humanity to participate in the unfolding of life. And I think with acupuncture, we're focused on all these, you know, we're on the body, we're palpating, we're putting needles into flesh, and we're trying to help people who are taking an hour and a half out of their workday to kind of, you know, keep moving forward. But I find in the Qigong classes, you just have these movements and they kind of, you can viscerally sense that, oh, I am interacting. You know, my feet are on the ground, I'm trying to put roots into the ground, and I'm trying to open up to heaven or the sky or spirituality, whatever, you know, just these energy, these dynamics. And that kind of opened me up to, like, wait a second, listening to like Jeffrey Yuen, you know, your teacher and my teacher from Taoist Traditions College, really kind of untapped some of the metaphors and the insights to kind of participate in, like, how does this look like in acupuncture, what I'm experiencing in Qigong? And I feel like a lot of yoga and spirituality, just call it the central channel. So you kind of have a, you know, this conduit between heaven and earth. And then the eight extraordinary vessels kind of expand on that. So they, you know, we have three channels that go through the center. So you have the chong, or the conception vessel, the penetrating vessel, and the governing vessel. So you kind of have this energy of what they call kundalini and yoga, all going up and down the central channel and having their own, we call that the first ancestry. All the ones that are in the center are the first ancestry. And we would say those are the ones that are, you know, most connected with the prenatal, that they're the early development. So they're kind of formed in utero, and then they develop. And we would say anything before the first cycle of 7 and 8. So we divide life into these periods, these rhythms. You know, it doesn't have to exactly be 7 and 8, but, you know, that's the idea that early imprinting of childhood would be the first ancestry. And that would give you the, we talk about the Chong meridian that goes straight up and down, being the template. Spiritually, we call it the curriculum or the blueprint. So you kind of have this idea that, you know, like, you have this code that you're going to go out in the world with, and maybe you've planned destinations and lessons and things like that. How is it actually going to unfold? And then you have your first, the channel that's in the front of the body is all about kind of being embraced by the maternal matrix. So that is sort of, you know, the relationship to the earth, relationship to your mother. You know, early childhood stuff will be kind of imprinted on that side of the front of the body through the belly. And then in the back, you have the spine, and that's sort of the energy, the more the yang energy, where the ren would be the yin, the more feminine. And then the spine is kind of what allows you to move through life. So we would say those are your core imprints. And Chinese medicine uses those channels rather frequently. And then we talk about there being two more ancestries. The second ancestry are what we call the wei vessels, or the linking vessels. The idea with those is that they are like those rhythms of life. Every 7 or 8 years or so, you're going to be more open to this connection, like we said, to the source chi, to the outside energy, which means that you have an opportunity for growth and change at a fundamental level, or you might just keep crystallizing further and further into some of the patterns that you've set in motion. So these are the time periods, like, you know, adolescence, marriage, career choices, midlife crisis, wisdom years. All these things kind of happen at these cycles. And I find it's a big opportunity to work with people, because I think a lot of our energy, kind of like, you know, phones and stuff, it gets stuck in memory. You're running so many applications, and there's only so much memory to go around. So the more energy that we have stuck in some of these events, whether they're traumatic or they're just even a good event, we might have too much energy stuck into. So I feel like those are interesting in that you can help liberate some of that memory, so it's open for new, you know, applications.
Mm-hmm. The ways I remember are records of time. And so you're mentioning the cycles of 7 and 8 and women typically cycle on sevens and then men will cycle on eights. And as we move through our records of time, just exactly what you're saying, do we remember those records? Are they positive? Is it an experience that we enjoyed and we're almost feeling too much energy for, which can result in like hyperactivity or just extreme excitement? And then there's also records of time where we don't remember because they've been traumatic, but they might be creating some sort of block or misunderstanding, or even I'll often hear patients say, I don't feel completely connected to myself. And that is something that I associate with those waymis. And would you say the same too?
Yeah, I think they're all about time. And I think it's, you know, the narrative and the story that we, because the events happen and events sometimes look different from different perspectives, and the events look different for yourself. Like we have 30 years of wisdom attached. You can look back at something that happened as a child and kind of look through it with a different eyes. And I feel like, you know, we're always sort of recreating these stories. And I think that's where some of the freedom is that, okay, the event already happened, but the story seems to be getting stuck. You know, we can't change the event, but we can certainly have some wiggle room in how our relationship to our story. And like you said, I think even positive events are just markers. You might not think about your wedding that much. You might not think about some great celebration or your graduation. They're just fixed in your head. And it's kind of like, I mean, those narratives have to stay alive, I think, or they're just kind of sitting there as kind of not really the most useful energy.
So let's dive into the ways a little bit more. So you're mentioning the story, and I'm sure I've had patients who they're locked into this story and this narrative. Sometimes what I'll say is that this treatment of the eight extraordinary vessels is going to give you space to shift that, to maybe see it a little differently, and to allow for the body and the soul to do some of that work for you, whether it is releasing the story or shifting your perspective on it. Because like you mentioned in the beginning, we're working with the psycho, mental, emotional perspective. So if someone does come in and they're kind of stuck in this story, how do you know which way to take them or where to meet them at is also something that I like to say is my job and our job and the way that Jeffrey has taught us is to meet the patient where they're at, to not make them do something that they don't want to do, that they're not ready for, that like is going to sneak up on them. So can you talk a little bit about working with somebody in that specific instant who might just kind of be stuck somewhere?
Yeah, I think that we're always, you know, meeting people where they're at is kind of one of the most important things that we do, and like kind of helping them with what they came to us for, which could be unrelated to, you know, the way that their story unfolds. But I do think that, and sometimes we earn the trust of our patients, or acupuncture and Chinese medicine earns their trust, and they might be, you know, willing to kind of look at things from a bit, you know, deeper level. And I think it's important, like I don't have a better narrative for the person. It's not really, I feel like narrative, like your story is very similar to your beliefs. Like there's like a Native American saying, like change the story, change your life. And Taoism has, you know, change the belief, you know, change your life. And I look at it kind of like, you know, if you smile, the world smiles with you. Those kind of sayings, I feel like, you know, reality does reflect back to some degree what we're putting out. And if what we're putting out is on some level challenging and distorted, we might get back distorted energy. But I feel like you're right. Like Tao, you know, the Tao, as we call it, and Qi is always about creating space. And then I think there'll be an intelligence that's, you know, beyond ours that will kind of do something with that space that's, you know, creative, you know, gives us a chance for, you know, for things to shift. So I always like to phrase that, okay, well, I'm not really trying to change anything, but if we can go in there with the intention of creating space, you might be able to, you know, your soul and your body and, you know, the mystery and whatnot can maybe create new possibilities. Mm-hmm. And I also find like those possibilities don't have to, I mean, transformation is possible, but I always feel like sometimes small shifts can really improve our quality of life a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I've noticed that with people, like, you know, they have a shoulder injury. It doesn't really matter if they get their full range of motion back usually. It's just, can they get that cup? Can they comb their hair? You know, those kind of things make a huge difference. So I feel like even working at this profound level. Subtle shifts are really like can make all the difference.
So yeah, we can use these channel systems to also work on physical manifestations that might be related to or a part of the psycho-emotional process that's happening.
Yeah, I would say that there's a lot of physical, I mean, we tend to focus on physicality as acupuncturists, so we're really focused on people's symptoms. So it makes sense that something called the conception vessel and these fundamental vessels that were formed in utero in those first years of childhood are perfect for fertility issues and gynecological issues, because they're really running on that same circuitry that keeps all the generations going. Mm-hmm. So reproductive health would be a big focus of them. It's also a good, you know, Jeffrey Yuen talks about, you know, our teacher there, about geriatrics being a natural home for the eight extraordinary vessels. So as people get older, I feel like, you know, they start being a bit more spiritual, right? You've kind of got all this, you know, you've raised your kids, maybe some of your romantic explorations and things are kind of like slowing down a little bit. So it's a natural time to look inward. So I do think that, and I feel like we were talking about the way vessels and the time being like it's when life passes before your eyes, you know, so we do have all these important events and we can kind of work on being at peace with ourselves, you know, long before we pass. Like, can I look at my life the same way I would, you know, from my deathbed? Am I willing to look at my life now and take that inventory, you know, so you can get a fresh start? Mm-hmm. But like you said, in that process, you might be able to cure anxiety, no, not cure, but, you know, improve your tendencies toward anxiety or depression or things like that.
I've even seen people who have anxiety, depression, or lack of focus, concentration, you know, their eyes will start to droop and cave in. And several of the meridians within the eight extras go to the eyes too. So it's about opening the eyes, shifting the perspective, helping us to see a different way. And we can even, I don't want to put you on the spot or me, because I'm not too great with some of the point names, but even some of the point names like Kidney 2, Blazing Valley, you know, really just it takes down the fire and it's located on the inner ankle, takes down, right? That's Kidney 2.
Yeah, that's down there on the, well, it's on the medial side of the foot, but yeah, it's down lower part of the body for sure.
Yep.
But some of those energetics are nice. Like that point has fire in it and it's good for like hot flashes and all sorts of heat presentations. And then I heard someone talk about it too. It's the idea that, the water element is related to the kidneys and our adrenals, and that the fire point, because we have these elemental points, can kind of spark that. Like, you know, it can be a catalyst, can be, you know, put a fire under it, so it takes, you know, create some inspiration and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the point names are poetic. Mm-hmm. Can't expect patients to know too many of the point names yet.
Yeah. Well, we have, gosh, how many points are there in the channel systems? Over 300, aren't there?
Yeah, I kind of make a fictitious number, like 365.
Yeah,
that's not it.
That's the idea. Yeah. And then there's probably like, you know, 200 of them that we are common or use, or even less than that. So to know all those point names is helpful in treatment and also in connecting patients with the medicine. And I want to say too, just while you're talking, I'm getting kind of this visualization of a river, and just to help our audience kind of understand these vessels and meridians a little bit more. But in my kind of mind's eye, they sit a little deeper in the body. So like you were saying, the first trinity, first ancestry is all about the prenatal. So that might be the undercurrent of the river. And in our body, Chinese medicine sees the body in these three levels. Can you talk a little bit about those three levels and then maybe where these other channel systems reside, kind of using that imagery or any other imagery that you might feel would be helpful?
I like I mean, we're always kind of comparing, you know, life to a river. Tao is always like water, you know, I think everybody can relate to those metaphors. And I remember a colleague of mine talking about how rivers do have, you know, there's different levels of flow. Like the deeper part of the river, if you're standing in, you're going to feel like kind of a heavier, denser flow, and the middle is going to flow a little bit differently. And then you even all the way to the surface where there's stuff that's on top of the surface. So I think we divide the body into those where like the surface level where we're kind of responding to the environment, you know, the responding to like allergies and things like that is the way level. That'd be kind of the surface of the river. And then I would say the extraordinary vessels are down there in that heavier bottom level, kind of the undercurrent. This is where you don't really see this part. This is where, you know, behind the scenes, kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know, that's the man behind the mirror type stuff or behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And you can divide the eight extraordinary vessels into three, like we did the first two ancestries. And we talk about how the first one is those formative years, more like the in utero. And then you have this time, this passage of time and how that's affected us. And I also feel like there's this idea of like, you may have come into this life with plans, and then those way vessels, the passing of time, like how did it play out? Where's the distortion between what you wanted to happen or what you thought would happen and what actually happened? And then they talk about the last ancestry being the present moment. So you have these, the motility vessels, the heal vessels, the chow vessels, and they represent the present moment, which would be kind of that upper part of the river again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. I think with the chow mice, the heal vessels, the motility is to our motion through life. And so that's where we're going to see kind of some of this sinewy and joint stuff. And in Chinese medicine, we think of the sinews as the muscular system and the tendons and the ligaments. Can you share a little bit about the points that are along the chows, the linking? I want to call them the chows, and I'm trying not,
A good English name. It's that, but yeah, I think the heel vessels, we'll call them. They're, and they're related to, you know, kind of keeping us grounded. They're related to the skeleton. So they're good for all sort of musculoskeletal issues and things that are, you know, kind of cemented into us, our posture, our gait, things like that. And the chow vessels are also associated with the eyes. We have this point, bladder one, you know, powerful points in a powerful location, so close to these, you know, the eyes and the brain. And there's some wonderful metaphors with the chow vessels that how we look at the world or how we look at ourselves, you know, and that's kind of a metaphor for, you know, this eye point sort of represents our, you know, how we see the world, like you had said. And then if we change how we see the world, we might be surprised by what else can change. And then they're related to the bones as well. And the idea, like, how do we stand up to the world? And then this other metaphor I always found kind of profound, because we don't think about this as often, is how do I stand up to myself? You know, and I think that's an important thing of like, you know, the world I have to relate to, but I forget that I have to relate to myself. And I might kind of go into like a default on it. And there are times where you might have to stand up to yourself and not let some of these habits or habits of the mind, you know, govern our lives. Yeah. And how we move is how we move through life. So I think like people, if you get into exercise or yoga or Qigong, you start recognizing like, wow, some of my movement patterns do seem to be related to my psycho-emotional patterns.
I kind of have two questions in here for you, but within all the channel systems, within all of them, we can divide them into yin and yang, like you said in the beginning with the Ren Mai, the conception vessel being yin, and then yang being the Du Mai. And I think I made a mistake when I was talking earlier because I was mentioning the heel vessel of yin chao. And so then we have the yang chao too. So what are some symptoms that would divide those chows so that we could see and someone could identify, oh, okay, this is more yang, whereas this would be more yin relative to those heel vessels?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because they relate to posture, you have sort of more pigeon-toed or kind of tending that way would be more yin, more bow-legged, more tension on the outside would be more yang. They're related to the eyes, and the eyes, you know, obviously if eyes open, we're not sleeping. Eyes closed, we are sleeping. So eyes closed would be more yin. If, you know, trying to somnolence, a tendency to, you know, have heavy eyes would be more yin. Being kind of manic and eyes wide open, having a difficult, or insomnia sometimes can have a this yang component where the eyes want to stay open. Sometimes being introverted would be more yin. You can kind of collapse in on yourself a little bit. You can have lower energy sometimes if you're, you know, more prone to being ruminating. And then they have archetypes for these too. So like the yin archetype for the chow vessels, it would be like the hermit. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the inward journey. The archetype for the yang aspect of the chow vessels is the activist or the warrior. Mm-hmm. So that idea that your relationship to the world is like you're always trying to change the world. But physically, that can cause skin conditions and allergies and things, because you have the relationship to the world is one of sort of fighting. So it's interesting. I always love that with Chinese medicine, how a physical thing can turn into, they're all on a spectrum.
Yeah, the body, somebody wrote a book on it, the body keeps the score. And it's true. If you have hip pain, we can use the chows, the yang chows, to address that. And, or like I was mentioning before, with the drooping of the eyes. And I want to mention too, that if you are looking for more introspection, we can use the hermit, we can use the yin vessels or the yin chow to help with that integration. And then if you have too much of, like what you were saying, that pushing out into the world and trying to control and the tension and just like this constant stress, we can help kind of soften that, and or these channel systems can help soften that and release, but then also allow the feeling of being more present. And I think what you've weaved in and out of our conversation about Qigong and Tai Chi is so wonderful, because the conversation of the eight extras is so big. It takes, I think, as a practitioner, some time spent with them to understand them, but then also as explaining it to patients too, you know, we want to meet them on that level and help them to understand when they're in that situation. But with the conversation of Tai Chi and Qigong, and someone who's wanting to kind of explore that deeper relationship with themselves and to the heavens and our ethereal soul being, where would people start with a YouTube class, or should they look for eight extra Qigong, or should they just go to kind of local community? Can you offer some guidance with your experience in the martial arts?
You know, intention we talk about as being, one of the most important things. So I do think you could sit with this information. It doesn't even have to be meditation or movement, but just, reading, like with the book type thing, just to kind of, we all have our own relationship to what it means to be alive on earth, what it means to wonder what, God and heaven and this, this cosmos mean. So I feel like you can scale it down to more of like a, philosophical reflection. But I do think the Chinese arts have been around for thousands of years and kind of go back into antiquity. So there's a lot of power in some of these things. And I feel like you can't always get it from a book. I mean, people learn a lot off the computer these days. I would recommend, if somebody wanted to kind of get into that, would just be to start in your own community. I remember that a martial arts teacher, like I said, we did this specific type of Tai Chi, this Northern Wu style Tai Chi. I'd say that's no longer true for me, but I did do that for a long time. And one of my first teachers had said, don't go to a town and necessarily look for somebody who teaches the same style that you're doing, because the odds are mediocre at best. Maybe look for the best teacher in that town, or the teacher that you resonate most with that town, and study with them, because you'll probably learn more from a good teacher that you resonate with than you will trying to find the thing that you want to learn. Specifically, I think you can travel if you want to learn something specific, but a lot of times it will require travel. So I would recommend, just if you're interested in any of those things, finding a real person just to teach you the basics, because the basics are kind of all the same. And then go from there, see if you're still interested in the other thing you were looking at once you find a teacher teaching something.
Mm-hmm. And from the practice of Tai Chi and Qigong and other martial arts, would you say that you are activating these channels, and that meditative practice is going to help you to develop a further relationship with yourself? Or is it something that the practice in itself offers, that meditation, and like you're saying, going in with an intention is what's going to help the relationship with yourself, or something completely different? That was kind of a loaded question. Yeah, there.
It is a good question. Let me see if I can parcel it out. I would say that most of the martial artists I've met are extremely practical. Mm-hmm. So most of the metaphors and things they might talk about that over tea, but they might not talk about that in their sort of beginner fundamentals class, because the idea is to kind of like, well, let's get clear. If we're going to do this, or if we're doing this, let's just be 100% present with the movement. So I think they're almost trying to get you out of the distractions of your mind. But then if they had a meditation, sometimes if you do a sitting meditation, they might allow more imagery and more intention to come in. But usually in the beginning movements, I think they're just trying to get you to do the movement safely, kind of get your body moving in an interesting manner. And then you can just keep layering on the intention. So sometimes if you just do a movement like this, you know, you might be opening your chest. It doesn't have to be opening to heaven. But once you kind of get the movement into your muscle memory, you can just keep adding some of these layers. So yeah, I would say you start pretty practical, especially with movement. And then sometimes meditation, I think you could start at a more esoteric level.
Mm-hmm. And it's really taking on the form and the creation of the ancestries. You know, when we're in prenatal and the first ancestry is being birthed and formed, it's the basics that we learn of walking and seeing and smelling, and that awareness that it sounds like when beginning a practice like Tai Chi or Qigong, that's what we're also wanting to do there too.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like I would say that what we call the governing vessel and the spine, all about movement. Yeah, when you're doing Tai Chi, kind of going back to like standing and taking a step is kind of trying to get us back into these early, like, things that have gone automatic or autonomic. Mm-hmm. And then the renmai, the yin vessel, that's about bonding. I don't know if the movement might be a little bit less oriented, but towards that. But it's a great thing to reflect on, like, you know, how have we, our initial relationships, how are they currently affecting our relationships? You know, are we overly independent? Are we overly clingy? Are we, you know, all these different things that were sort of set in place early on.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that would have to be done more through touch and meditation than movement. But
yeah, and I see you kind of did it earlier, but that position just holding outside the body, you can imagine yourself, you know, with the energy inside, kind of hugging yourself, nourishing your renmai. And you can also imagine it with just kind of holding that space, holding the space in between for fulfillment. And like you were saying, the intention is going to shift based off of the movement and the experience that you want from, you know, the practice. Quieting the mind and thinking about some of, you know, like you're saying, these channel systems, like you can drop the energy right down to the back of the body, or you can drop it down to the front too. And there are meditations for the eight extras.
Right.
Which can facilitate these too, these relationships with them.
For sure. I think guided meditation is powerful, and then you can add it to movement, and it, is certainly, you know, effective. And I also feel like the person who's guiding the meditation, if they're kind of viscerally in it, you know, they've done some of this, so they spent some time with it, I think they can transmit that pretty powerfully. And if you're ready, if that's kind of where you're at and that resonates with you, I think you can, you know, words can have power. These intentions can convey a lot of deep work that, you know, people have been doing and bringing it to other people.
Yeah. I remember being in clinic, and you and Charles were the only supervisors who would say, let's stop, take a break before we get into session, do a little Qigong, do some breathing exercises. And that right there shows the break, the transition from the experience that we just had, which might be those records of time, and then going into a new record of time, but also using the chows to take that step forward, and also the need to be external, but also to be internal. And I remember appreciating that practice so much in clinic, because it not only set the intention, but it allowed for that transition of time and the knowing in my body and in my brain that I'm now going from this person, you know, taking off that hat and putting on this hat, which is so valuable, I think, because so many people, men and women, we wear so many different hats. And that's also where these vessels come in too, is our perception of ourselves and the outside world.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, creating a ritual, even if it's only 5 seconds, I feel like, to acknowledge that you're moving from one space to another and trying to get, trying to stay present. And I think that's the beauty of some of this work, is that kind of the deeper, what they call, shadow work or whatever it may be, but some of the deeper psychological work allows you to stay present during challenging times and not be so easily triggered. Or even if you're triggered, you can still kind of observe yourself as triggered. You don't necessarily lose yourself. You kind of stay present for the challenging situations. And I think that that really helps us to help other people, or to shift from, driving to work through traffic for a half hour and then get ready to hold the healing space. I think all these, meditations and self-exploration really help make that more likely to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. Are you familiar with the book 365 Tao?
I might have seen like a Tao a day card, but I don't know if I know the book.
I wish I had it on my desk. It's pretty thick, but there's basically 365 days of, Taoist wisdom. And not too long ago, I read one that was about being the watcher and being the observer. And I think that's such an important thing to bring into the discussion of these eight extras, because they bring in the opportunity for us to reflect, to observe our behaviors, to become more aware, and to really connect with this larger word of integrity. Who do we want to be? How do we want to present ourselves? And allow for that connection instead of just being separate from.
Yeah, I do think detachment sounds like a negative word, and being an observer sounds pretty passive, but those are sort of the basic, I think, on the prerequisite for looking internally. Because if you don't like something that you found, or there's something challenging or something, whatever it may be, that ability to stay present, but able to watch you can still watch the movie, without being necessarily triggered. Because I think that's, if things are too traumatic, each time they go back, you're going to just kind of like pull, not look at it, which is natural. But I think the way to practice would probably not to keep trying to look at it, but just keep finding new ways to stay present and cultivate that, sort of that watcher, that observer consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you look at like the Renmai, for example, it has a direct relationship with the central nervous system. So it has that deep connection with what we're saying of just like consolidating the chi, consolidating the energy, bringing things inward, and helping the nervous system to be less reactive, like you're saying, less in that fight flight, and be more, allow for more of that calm river. And all the channel systems do that. It's acupuncture is so physiologically directed towards all the systems of the body, and allowing for that as well is important to understand that, even though, and I know our conversation, I just kind of wanted us to like jump right into the eight extras, and it seems so ethereal, but it's also very scientific and very factual as to where these channel systems are placed and why they're placed there, and the correlation to the nervous system and the organs. Have you seen, when working with these channel systems, that there are those physiological shifts kind of? So before, we were talking about more like pain, but what about somebody who has an internal disease?
It's interesting. A lot of these things are, like everything else, is formed embryologically, but a lot of the relationships we talk about in Chinese medicine, are formed at these specific times, and like these two sets of tissues, separated, but they used to be the same tissue. And we get that that renmai in the front of the body going to like the anterior pituitary gland. Mm-hmm. Then you have the governing vessel up the spine is going to the posterior. So you're going to have like that, the dumai, the governing vessel in the back is going to be more related to the nervous system, which will be more yang relative to like the endocrine system, because the nervous system moves fast. You know, you need these signals so that you can survive, and they're very specific. And then you have the endocrine, which is going to be slower. Things get released into your bloodstream. They have to kind of have a slower feedback loop. They're going to take more time to feel. That'd be a more yin. So I do think that, you know, they're not so specific towards the symptom when you get to this level, but they're almost just sort of recalibrating your entire hormonal system or recalibrating your nervous system. And then we can do other things that might be more specific to the specific gland, you know, the thyroid or the adrenals or whatever the case may be. So they do seem like they're giving you entrance into some of these core settings of the endocrine system and the neurological system, vascular system, and things like that. And then all of acupuncture seems, you know, it's all kind of a communication system to pretty much every part of the body.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that Tai Chi and Qigong do the same with that activation and specific areas of the brain and the nervous system?
Yeah, I've noticed that people that had, when I first came into practice, somebody might have no connection to acupuncture other than making it to the appointment. But they did Kung Fu or karate for like 7 years or more. They would almost always tend to have a pretty strong response to acupuncture. And I always thought that was that all these movements are just, they kind of exercise these meridians, even if they didn't think of it that way, but all those movements sort of awaken that. And I do feel like you are kind of priming the movement of the energy, you know, through these maps from Chinese medicine. Whenever you're doing these Chinese practices, they do seem like there's a direct correlation. The thing I do notice as far as health and trying to change patterns in your own body, having someone help you seems to be a, you know, super powerful catalyst. I've had times where I have a symptom, I'm going to do my thing for myself, and I'm like, I can't quite shift this. And, you know, one acupuncture treatment, it might be the catalyst to like, wow, I really needed help. I remember there's this woman who wrote in Acupuncture Today, the newspaper that gets sent to acupuncturists. She had been a molecular biologist before an acupuncturist. So she, most people kind of like go the opposite, or they get so interested, they kind of explore the sciences, but she was already a molecular, or it might've been vice versa, but she had both of these. And she likened it to, there's this one like helper molecule that'll, you know, that has to have enough energy here, and it can give a little energy to catalyze this process in someone else. And she was comparing that to the therapist patient relationship. Like, you're kind of going there to sort of get catalyzed, something that it's hard to do on your own.
Hmm. So in your experience, if you don't mind, what you just talked about, you kind of, you know, it was like you had the treatment and then boom. So what was that like? What was the relationship to yourself, that feeling that you were looking for, or what did that shift feel like? What was acknowledged? What was the intention there? Yeah, the change.
What I've noticed with acupuncture is sometimes it will sort of induce a state of mind or just a feeling in the body that I can listen to, that I'm not driving it anymore. You know, I'm just kind of like tuned into my body, and my body's starting to do interesting stuff where I can feel energy move, or like emotional content will just kind of present itself. I don't have to go looking for it. And I find that in the practice, sometimes I feel like I'm kind of driving this process. I'm learning about the process. I'm creating new neural pathways and things like that. But sometimes if you get stuck, you know, I sometimes can't get out of it as easily as I can with, you know, the needles are a powerful catalyst of movement and change. So I think that's and self-cultivation is also powerful, but sometimes, yeah, just the presence of another person. I remember having these abdominal pains when I was in acupuncture school, and I had two kids and I was working full-time going to school. And this woman did a whole bunch of abdominal work and all this stuff, and like nothing really happened. Like, I was still kind of stuck. And I had tried pretty much everything before I had kind of gone to this energy medicine practitioner that my wife was studying with. And all of a sudden, she just stopped and placed her hands on my solar plexus and under my solar plexus. I felt like 100 pairs of hands on me, started laughing, and this thing that was going to send me to the hospital soon was over. And she was like, I think this was just your body couldn't assimilate the amount of information and stress that you've been putting into it. And, you know, it was just interesting, just this touch.
Mm-hmm. And the intestines and that area around the belly button is associated with our earth element, but then we can also get into other channel systems like the liver and the gallbladder of wood and maybe developing some of that stagnation. And that just the power of energy medicine, it sounds like maybe she was doing Reiki, helped to open up the block and relieve your earth element of all the like information that you were stuffing in there and more. It's like when we overeat and overconsume, which can also be assisted with the Renmai, because the Renmai is all about, you know, that consumption, but also that self-hug and addiction too, that she was kind of able to allow your body to transform that information and maybe even integrate it more. Like you kind of said, you had some wisdom from it too.
Yeah. It's interesting that just slowing down. I mean, she was, you know, like had this sophisticated sort of like, you know, cultivated Reiki energy, but it was like, it was interesting to me that the stopping, now we're not trying to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, to talk about like, there was combinations. There's combinations of food, combinations of emotion, you know, combinations of learning new information. So, yeah, it was hard to assimilate. And we talk about in, you know, Chinese medicine that you need to digest, you know, your food, obviously, but you also need to digest your emotions, kind of need to digest the events of your day. I need to assimilate, integrate, eliminate, you know, and then a lot of times we hold on to the stuff that we don't need to hold on to too.
Yeah, going back to the river analogy, that's often how I'll describe acupuncture meridians and channel systems to patients. And I'll say they're, you know, you can create dams in your body, and we need the acupuncture channels and other meridians to participate like little beavers that can come out and clear those dams, or even, you know, help to open those blockages. And rivers run fast, they narrow, they turn and move. And so even with patients who have like small joint pain, I'll say it's just dammed up where the river narrows the most. And so doing kind of those Tai Chi exercises that you were talking about that really get into the fingers and forget how we were referring to them before, but the yin ways and the wei mais are on the hands and the arms. And those were the channel systems that we were talking about relative to heart pains and life changes and the records. I always kind of like to say it's how we, you know, shake hands with the world and greet the world and take in information. And so doing those kind of wrist movements will help the body to open up those small, narrow areas of the rivers and channel systems.
That Chinese medicine saying is like, what, if there's free flow, there'll be no pain. If there's not free flow, there'll be pain and symptoms. So I feel like anytime anything gets stuck on any level, whether it's a smaller joint, whether it's a, you know, a story around an event that happened long ago, whether it's a food combination, it's like anytime something gets stuck, I feel like we run the risk of having having issues and symptoms. And it seems like, I mean, Chinese medicine and the Tao are kind of synonymous with like trying to get things flowing again.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe it's sometimes easier to be on the side of the river, right? You just kind of like things move a little slower. I'm doing all right. But then if you're hanging on a rock on the side of the river, but you want to get back into the main flow, it can be a little weird as you let go of your comfort zone to try to get back into the flow. So there are resistances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lillian Bridges kind of introduced me to the concept of life as a river and then the acupuncture channels as those rivers. And so she would talk about like, you know, everybody's in their own boat without a paddle and you're flowing down that river. And, you know, if you want to grab onto the rock before you go down the waterfall, grab onto the rock, but you still might have to go down that waterfall. And we use nature so much in Chinese medicine because it's just appropriate. We are a part of nature. But I think that visualization too gives the kind of shows the example that if you're grabbing onto that rock and you just need to let go, let's do some of these 8 extra treatments, or let's just do one that might be, you know, that Yang Wei, San Zhao 5, that just kind of like allows you to release, but release with grace and knowing and trust to allow for that inner wisdom to come up that might just be blocked from that rock of fear and scare and anxiety and past traumas.
Right. You might be able to go down the waterfall a little more gracefully. Yes.
Come down in one piece.
Of the last channel that we haven't talked about is what we call the belt channel. Mm. And I think it's one of the most important channels, and it's all about letting go and making space. We talk about latency in our tradition a lot, where things you don't want to deal with in real time, like, I can't deal with this, I'm going to put it in the closet, I'm going to put it in the basement, put it in the garage. And we do that with like viruses and bacteria and all sorts of you know, health-related things. They just kind of get put into the closet. And the belt channel goes right around the waist. And sometimes the belt channel will become visible as we expand from the things that we're holding on to. And I find if you're going to do one extraordinary vessel treatment, that can sometimes be the, you know, very powerful one, because everybody's got this baggage. And, you know, trying to just let go of what we can let go.
Mm-hmm. I'll see that, because I do quite a bit of women's health. So I'll see that with women who have cysts and fibroids or don't have a period at all. And I'll say, or even when we're trying to like move things out of the body, like you're saying, and we want to use the menstrual cycle to kind of gather and then exit that release from any toxicity or pathology that's in the body. And I'll always say to them, just know that these treatments also address, you know, your emotional body, your physical body. So if you notice that you're wanting to clean out a drawer or get to that closet or, you know, get rid of things, that that also is allowing your body to purge and get rid of, let go of that excess that's around you that can be cluttering our internal system too.
Right. Like we call it feng shui, right? The, you know, the art of placement in your surroundings and stuff. And I think sometimes in these paths, you're like, oh, it's like internal feng shui. I put stuff in the wrong spot. I've got too much stuff. I got boxes of stuff I haven't looked at in 30 years. Mm-hmm. People will go home and clean after these treatments.
Yep. Yeah. It's so good. And that's how we live with our environment and become our environment. Just like you're saying, the daimai and the belt vessel is draining and releasing, we can also consolidate it too. And so can you give some examples of kind of more the yin aspect of the belt channel?
Right. I mean, the belt, so almost all the meridians, if you ever look at a poster, go up and down, right? Even the adiaxial vessels go up and down. So this is one of the few examples of a pathway that goes sideways. So it's about even with the navel and goes around like an actual belt. And so it's kind of helping maintain the integrity of your upright posture. It's providing that horizontal coordinate to go with the vertical coordinate. So it's kind of this upright chi. So I feel like anything that is sinking, and that's kind of the accumulations, the gatherings, the belly, those are kind of the things that are going to weigh us down. They're going to kind of hold us down a little bit. I feel like it can be useful for anything that sort of sinking, I guess, leakages through the lower body. They used to use a lot of this for like threatened miscarriage. You could use it to kind of like hold everything. I would say that's part of its use. Kind of helps us with our physical integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that lifting and holding, like you're saying, anything that's within the lower body, prolapse, excessive bleeding, urination, incontinence, even like low back pain. I've definitely used some of the consolidating vessel of that belt to help kind of suck things into that low back.
Right. I've also noticed the more I, you know, because these are lifelong studies, right? So I've taught some, you know, a lot of classes on these, and each time I might learn something new as I'm teaching, and made me think about a lot of times the belt channel is used for like upper body symptoms, like, you know, might be shortness of breath or headaches, because if the basement's full and the belly's full, none of this energy can descend. None of this has no, you know, nowhere to go. That's kind of made sense to me of looking at these and like, oh, it's located in the lower belly, but it can back up the system in a whole bunch of ways through all the levels.
Yeah. If you would, let's use that analogy of the house, because that's how I've kind of assimilated myself with some of these eight extra vessels, not only through the rivers and, you know, the flow there, but So your demise, the basement, and where would the other ones fall? You mentioned that first ancestry kind of being the blueprint, so the foundations, maybe the concrete of that basement. Is there placement for the other channel systems?
Let's see. I think what I remember noticing was kind of like, so you do have the Chang is like your architecture, you know, the blueprint. And then I find like, I think I've seen it as like the Ren Mai, the yin aspect is going to be the raw materials, like the substances. The yang aspect is going to be actually the constructing of the house, the movement. Where the rest of them fit in, it's hard to say. I've noticed it in my physical practice where it feels like there's a spatial representation of them. Like we have the central channel. I feel like the belt is this sort of this bubble that kind of wraps around us. And then you have channels that are kind of like supporting the other channels. Like I would say the yin chao supports the conception vessel. So it's helping our integrity here. And then the yang chao, that warrior activist energy, is supporting the edges of our bubble, giving us boundaries, giving us strength out there. And then it's like the wave vessels are sort of this, where they kind of look like a loom of life, like the warp and like a tapestry of all the events of your life, kind of connecting and linking all these other aspects of yourself. What that looks like as a house, I'm not quite sure.
It's the tapestry in the house and all the step in the house, right? And then the pathway that we take to walk around our house.
Yeah, the stories that we tell about ourselves in our house, things like that. So we do have the wave vessels as a tapestry. So that's the start.
Are there, so you mentioned the archetypes for the chows, which are the heel vessels. What are there archetypes too for the Wei Mais and the first ancestry?
I don't know if we get archetypes quite as readily. I'm sure that you could assign them, you know, based on the archetypes that you're sort of studying. I do like the that first, the blueprint, we call it the Chang, just being like tuning somebody back into themselves. Like the idea that there's nothing wrong with you. There's just all this baggage and distortion. Let's just kind of connect you to your original nature, you know, your most authentic self. And I like with Taoism, the idea that, well, somewhere in there, we're fundamentally good by design. You know, and if you trust that about yourself, you know, then it's like, well, I'm just going to, you know, just connect to myself. I don't feel like people don't usually get too emotionally overloaded from Chang Mai treatments, I find. And then the Ren Mai is all about these relationships to your mother and to life and potential addictions and like oral type, you know, things related to addiction. Those I feel like can be bring up a little bit more, more material.
Smoking.
Yeah, smoking, all the round muscle have a relationship. So your oral fixation can also be related to, you know, other developmental issues like, you know, Freudian stuff or whatever the case may be. But it's interesting too, because we're not trained. I mean, we're trained to listen and to help and help hold healing space, but we're not counselors. So I find it's an interesting, we have all this information. But I find the best way to go into it is to like create space for change for people and then help them set intentions for themselves and see if I think it goes well with counseling, because I think sometimes talk therapy will prime the pump, but it sometimes won't get the somatic. I find that with people who I've had people just come and I just put needles in the same way I would everybody else who presented like that, and they'll have some sort of miraculous response. And I'm like, I can't really take any credit for that, you know? And most of the time it looked like, oh, this person has really done the emotional work. They've done all this work on this stuff, and it just needed like the acupuncture needles to sort of like make their body get on board with the changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me when we were talking in the beginning of those patients who they're just stuck on the same story and they've kind of just been in that same pattern and processing, and they want to get out, but they don't know how to get out, and they've done so much work. And you know, a lot of times therapy, it's like, that's great, don't get me wrong, but sometimes it's like even the therapist just kind of keeps you in that circle, and there's a diffusion and that happens that just kind of like pops the balloon sometimes, and we get that relief and can continue our journey on.
Yeah. And I think those loops, I mean, that's a powerful, like stuck, right? You're stuck in a moment, stuck in a loop. And I think acupuncture's strong point is trying to get things back in the flow. And the flow can be scary. I feel like that, you know, it's just, it's sometimes you want to slow things down. So so that you can wrap your head around it. Mm-hmm. And I said, trying to wrap your head around it is often the stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember being in clinic before I was practicing. So I would go to the student clinic for treatment, and these fourth years would be giving me 8 extra treatments. And I had no idea. I didn't know that they were doing that. I didn't know what these 8 extra treatments were. But I just remember feeling these profound shifts of just, again, that balloon popping and just kind of being like, okay. And then saying something to them, one in particular, and her saying, like, looking in her chart, like, oh yeah, that's because I gave you Chong treatment last time. And I'm thinking, like, what in the world? And it just helps you to become more connected to yourself and your experiences. And like we were talking about before, becoming that observer of your life and allowing for the reflection to come through. And I think your true self, which is what you're talking about here, is how it really brings forward our light and our ability to kind of have that ripple of kindness within us and without us too, outside of ourselves.
Yeah. It makes me think about what I've noticed, like, you know, we go to acupuncture kind of just because we have an issue, right? You know, something's hurting or something's, we have a medical situation. And, you know, the acupuncture maps are kind of designed to improve the organs or the flow in the areas that are contributing to that. But that process can take a while. It can require dietary changes, nutritional, exercise, Chinese herbs, you know, acupuncture on a regular basis, which is great. I mean, that this is an avenue. But I find the thing that acupuncture to me is almost 100% consistent at is giving you access to these new spaces in your emotional self. You know, so, I mean, some people come in, they might be a little bit overly ambitious about constantly emotional processing, which is its own issue. But I feel like for the people that are just trying to, like, well, I have this issue, but I'm just going to look at it from, I'm just going to work on myself a little bit. I feel like every treatment does create a shift of, you know, emotional content that can be let go of or integrated or just some space. So it does seem to me that a lot of what acupuncture accomplishes is through that mechanism of creating that space in our emotional self.
Yeah. And how we started the conversation is where the practitioner would choose to go. You know, what do we want to work on, those records of the past or our relationship to our internal and external world, and using those as kind of our guiding system for where the patient is at. I almost feel like now that we've been chatting for a while and kind of the end of our conversation needs to be the beginning of our conversation. But like, right, I said before, I wanted to just kind of jump in and almost like throw this stuff up on the wall and kind of sort through it as we do as practitioners, but also as we do with life and trying to just figure our way through this journey and this experience that we're in.
Yeah, reverse engineering the conversation back to the, I agree, it's a good thing too, because, you know, you're asking me about, like, when would you use them? Like, we're meeting people where they're at. And I do find that I don't tend to use these on the first visit. Yeah. With people, if they've had a lot of acupuncture and there's a certain background and inclination, I might. But for the most part, I kind of want to see how the person responds to acupuncture in a practical way. Are they going to, they might already have like very powerful responses to more like primary meridian treatments that we normally do. Mm-hmm. So I would like to kind of just, and I'd like to establish some rapport. I don't necessarily want to create this sort of like space into deep content if rapport isn't really established. And if they haven't really like asked about anything or used words or language that was pointing to these deeper levels, it would probably take me a while to go there. I might go there sooner if it was about fertility and gynecology, because I think some of these channels are just so directly effective in that manner. Mm-hmm. But as far as people's like self-exploration, I sometimes use them just to shift too. Like if things aren't working or things seem like they're stuck, I love that about our system with all these channel systems, is that even if you use them once or twice, it seems to get people's responses unstuck, and then you can kind of move forward even if you're not using these channels again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even from a practitioner perspective, we have the opening point, so we can just do the opening point, send the signal, and not do any other points on the channel. But also, I think it is really important too, what you're saying is that we want to meet the person where they're at. We want this to be a team that works together, and we don't push these on our patients. I like to explain what they are, and it sounds like you do too. And that, just like I said in the beginning, they really are channel systems that are helpful in your relationship to your constitution, your spirit, your soul, you know, karmic processing. And those can be really big conversations. I've said that sentence a lot, just that this is like big conversation and big context. And it is. And a lot of people are there. And it just is such a beautiful thing to have access to something as a practitioner that can help people so much.
Right. And if they're already in that conversation in their lives, well, in these sort of, you know, these bigger topics, I feel like this is kind of a natural home.
Mm-hmm.
Energetically.
Yeah. The home within our own home and making it more of our home. How do we make that house a home? Getting back into that analogy.
And I always like, you know, home is, you know, where the heart is. So I feel like, you know, kind of creating that heart space so that within yourself, so that you can feel comfortable in your skin and then try to face the situations that you have with a little bit of that, you know, trying to maintain that connection to yourself. And you can bring that to the world. I mean, that's the beauty of trying to, you know, open up that connection.
Yeah, the gifts that we have to share. That's what we all came here to do, you know, is to share and give and to, I hate to say this because it's so cliche, but make the world a better place.
Right, right. And some of those gifts they talk about, you know, the wound is where the light comes in, you know, I think. And I've heard some traditions where the gifts are sometimes entangled with the wounds, you know, so that's part of that, you know, part of the positive bonus of the healing journey, as opposed to just trying to get out of pain, is that there's some good things in the closet. There's some surprises and some aspects of our true nature that are worth finding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Diamonds in the rough, very valuable pieces of ourselves. I do, before we close up, when Peter and I were first talking about putting this podcast together, I wanted to open up with a paragraph from his book. And so I'm going to do that now, if that's okay with you, Peter. I'm just going to do a little short reading from it. So this is on page 24, and the title of the section is A Quest to Know Ourself. In this book, we are going on a quest to get to know ourself, and we shall see that there is no other way to awaken humanity to its own potential than to awaken one's self. We will be journeying deep into the Tao, deep into the meridian matrix that weaves together the substantial and insubstantial, the soul and the spirit, the body and the mind, the material and the immaterial. We will be journeying directly to the essence of our being, where our ancestry, our DNA, and our instinctual drives connect us to the Tao field, the morphogenic record of our personal and collective story. This is where personal and collective evolution takes place, and we will be looking specifically at the evolution circuitry of the 8 extra meridians, or the 8 extra vessels, in order to shine light on the unfolding of the evolutionary process. And I think that paragraph alone just sums up our entire conversation.
Yeah. I mean, there's hope for the healing of humanity. And I guess it starts within our relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one word that we really didn't use much is our essence, you know, our Jing. You talked about it a little bit, but it gets to that true self and awakening and giving us access to the hidden parts of ourselves that live in the Jing and in the essence.
And that's kind of tied to that whole mystery. I feel like that's part of the beauty of like the Tao, is that we're not trying to pierce the mystery. We're just trying to relate and play our part in the mysteries of life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Peter, for joining me. If anybody wants to learn a little bit more about you, they can go to soulpivot.com, or maybe take your chances and consider enrolling in Taoist traditions too, if you're still there.
Two different levels of commitment there for sure.
I know. I guess that's too what our conversation has been as well. The levels of commitments on our eight extra vessels here.
Well, thank you, Mallory. It's been a pleasure spending the morning with you. And I hope that this is, you know, people enjoy it and I enjoyed our time.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Peter. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening to Through the Funnel. I hope you found something useful. If you have and you like what you've heard, share around and leave a review on Apple. To get in touch, learn more about me and my classes, visit my website at sourcemedicinalarts.com. Till next time.